there is there. Mm-hmm. It's a male Whitford. So you can call him in.
And you were just calling him in by just doing one single note.
Yeah. So he might respond in a minute. And you hear the female in the background?
Yeah.
She's responding. So she's a bit confused about this other male Whitbird that's in her territory. Beautiful call. It's a very special place for animals like the eastern bristlebird. It's actually the most important remaining population of that wonderful bird. And we've discovered that, in fact, the species is not that sensitive to fire, but it is very sensitive to foxes. So the really important thing to do is to make sure that we maintain a really effective fox control program. And that's exactly what the park managers have been doing, maintaining a really effective fox control program. And it turned out to be particularly important directly after the fire, because that's the time when all the cover's removed and when fox predation can be the most effective. So what had to happen directly after the fire was that all the fox baiting stations had to be put back in place very quickly, and the bait take by foxes increased dramatically for the first 6 months or so after the fire, and then dropped away again. So there was a pulse of foxes that came into the park, and they would have had a devastating impact on the animals in this system, but the baiting system was put in place, and it really had a big effect on foxes, and I think it had a big effect on the persistence of a lot of animals that might have otherwise been eaten by red foxes that shouldn't be here. Again, really good science, really good management, really good responses to manage what really is one of Australia's unknown icons. This park, Buttery, gets over 450,000 visitors every year, so that's more than Kakadu and Uluru put together. And most Australians probably got no idea that it's even here. But it's very special. It has very high species richness. It has many species that are not doing well in the rest of eastern Australia. And it's a real gem, this place.
Apart from being beautiful to look at and quite enclosed in this part of the south coast, you're also telling me that it's sort of a bit like Sydney, but without the development. So is this what Sydney would have looked like if Sydney wasn't built there?
Absolutely, absolutely. We have beautiful high cliffs, some of the highest cliffs anywhere on the east coast. Lots of heathland, woodland, forest, swamp country. All packed together in very close proximity to one another. You can walk from a swamp to a subtropical rainforest in 200 metres in this place. It's just remarkable. And the changes in the plants and animals across that 200 metres is breathtaking. It really is a stunning place, exactly like Sydney. Jervis Bay in many ways has very similar characteristics to Sydney Harbour. And the big difference, of course, is that there's a few thousand people rather than many millions of people. And so that makes it a really important place to study, but also a very important place to maintain as a healthy, vibrant nature reserve and national park for all Australians to be able to enjoy.
Now, you're researching a number of things while you're down here, and we've been talking a little bit about birds and how they respond to fires. And maybe just talk about some of those rare and endangered birds that you see around here and how they've been coping in recent times.
So the park is probably best known for the eastern bristlebird, which is highly endangered. And it's been lost from almost all of its distribution along coastal eastern Australia. But there are a very strong set of populations here in this area at Jervis Bay, and also across on the other side of Jervis Bay at Beecroft bombing range run by Department of Defence. And so that's really one of the iconic animals in this park. So we're able to count those animals on all of our long-term sites. We have 150 long-term sites in this national park right across the whole area, every year we come down here in late September and we do counts of all the birds. And at the same time, we also do our surveys of reptiles. And we've put out what we call artificial substrates, which are tin tiles and railway sleepers. And they're little microhabitats that reptiles can colonise, and that gives us a method to be able to work out what species are here and in what numbers. So we've been doing that for a decade as well, and you really get to understand how the park's performing, what things are going well and what things are not, and what you can do about the things that are not going well. So we have other species that are really important here. Another one is the ground parrot. It's a wonderful, iconic parrot. It's very difficult call for me to mimic, but it has this wonderful lilting sort of ascending call that we often hear at the research station very early in the morning, around about 5, quarter past 5 in the morning, just before we go out onto our sites. But there are other animals and plants that are really important in this park. Another one is an animal called a common death adder, which would probably strike fear into most people, and so it should. It's a highly venomous snake. But it's not actually doing very well in many parts of its distribution, and it's probably not appropriate to call it a common death adder because many places it's not common. But that animal does have a good stronghold here. We don't see it very often, but it's a very important part of the food web here, and it's an animal that we'd want to see continuing to persist in reasonable numbers here into the future.
In terms of your research, and you mentioned you come here every year, how has this year compared to some of the previous years that you've been here?
Oh, this year's been a really great year. We have one of our ANU staff members, Chris McGregor. He lives and works in this region and comes into the park every day. And one of the things that he's been seeing is a really big increase in the numbers of a bird called the white-cheeked honeyeater. And for a long time, we hardly saw any of those birds. They were in small pockets down around towards St George's Basin on a few of our sites there. But in the last couple of years, the numbers have absolutely skyrocketed. And so really over the next 10 years, we hope to be able to work out whether or not these are regular cycles or some other kinds of changes that really you wouldn't have anticipated before we started. So there are lots of good news stories in this park, and lots of very unexpected findings that really you couldn't have anticipated at the beginning of this.